That was Grieg's Norwegian Dance, Opus 35, Number 2, and it was performed by Ivana Gavrik. I'm Erica Wirth, and welcome to this Pianist podcast. Today I am speaking to Ivana about her life in music, with a particular emphasis on her upcoming album, Throwback to Dance. Ivana, it's lovely to have you on the Pianist podcast today.
Hello, thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here.
Oh, you're welcome. Anyway, to start out with, we're here to talk about your new album, which is called Throwback to Dance. That's quite an intriguing title, and maybe you could tell us about this.
Yes, well, I've been championing the works of Grieg for nearly two decades now. And about 5-6 years ago, I came across a description of Ravel and Grieg meeting in Paris in 1894, where Ravel played one of Grieg's Norwegian dances to him. And Grieg was sort of stomping around saying, "No, no, no, young man, it doesn't go like that. It's a peasant dance. It needs to be much more rustic." And this endearing image just really stuck in my head. And I thought I had to do something with the two composers, because Ravel was very enamored by Grieg's music. He thought that after Debussy, he was the most influential composer on both Ravel and Ravel's peers. So I thought, not many people know about this connection, and I should look into it further.
You're absolutely right. I would never
no.
I would never put Grieg and Ravel together. Obviously, their music is very different. So the album is about Grieg's influence on Ravel?
Well, it's about how composers take dance forms from the past, so Baroque dances mainly, and use them to, in this instance, to create a new direction, new paths, basically trying to avoid Germanic romanticism and the Germanic canon. So Ravel was very keen to do that and create a French sound or his own sound, and Grieg was a composer that paved a way for this. They really loved the way that Grieg encapsulated Norwegian nature in his music, and also how he used dance forms, and he was just different from the rest of composers in that era. And so he sort of paved the way, and Ravel, of course, took it much further than that. But he was an interesting composer to him. And actually, Ravel even wrote a theme and variations on a theme by Grieg, but alas, it's only in sketch form. I was so disappointed, because I was really hoping to get my hands onto this piece. But yes, he was so important that he in his youth, obviously, but he even thought to write something based on Grieg. So there's definitely a link there.
That's interesting. And of course, you start out the album with Grieg's Holberg Suite, which of course looks back to dance, doesn't it? It's very neoclassical.
Very neoclassical. I mean, I think we always think of Stravinsky as being the person who invented, as it were, neoclassicism, but actually it comes here much earlier, in 1884. And I think there is a similarity between the Holberg Suite and Le Tombeau de Cupin in concept, because the Holberg Suite was all about celebrating Nordic culture. Obviously Holberg, but everything Nordic, and the Le Tombeau de Cupin started off its life as a Suite Française, which he then changed the title after the First World War and everything that happened, and his whole life changed, obviously. But initially, the idea was to celebrate French music, starting from Cupin and ending with Saint-Saëns in the Toccata. But so the sort of nationalistic aspect is shared, even though obviously different countries.
Gosh. That's amazing, isn't it, really?
Yes, no, it's really fun. I'm always fascinated by that, and how people that you really don't put together actually have something in common. And
absolutely.
And also, they were both very, very petite men, and so this image of the two of them dancing around in an apartment in Montmartre is just lovely.
That's absolutely true. I've been to Bergen. I've seen that statue of Grieg. Have you been there too?
Yes, yes, yes. I've played there. I even played on his Steinway in his house.
Oh,
I was allowed to practice there quite late at night. And, you know, I'm not really, I don't believe in ghosts, but there was a there was a feeling.
and what a remarkable position that house is. Did you
see? It's just glorious, isn't it? And then Grieg's music just makes sense when you visit Norway, and one feels so small in nature there, because fjords and the The expanse is awesome in the real sense of the word. And yes, I think he really captures that sense of space and loneliness often in his music.
Yes, you're right. I think every lover of Grieg's piano music should go to see his home, don't you think?
Yes, and the little hut. Yes. I've
Yes,
also
absolutely.
recently been to Ravel's house, just outside Paris. Have you been?
No.
It's absolutely exquisite. Of course it is because it's Ravel, but it's like one of his pieces because he designed the wallpaper, he designed everything, every detail. And it's really quirky and fun and it's fascinating. He moved there just after he finished Le Temple de Cupin. But for example, he was nocturnal and he used to write at the piano during the night, and that's the darkest room of the house. But he was an insomniac, and his bedroom is bright yellow. Funny enough, he can sleep.
Oh, how interesting.
It's
Whereabouts
really
is it outside of Paris?
oh, I've forgotten the name of it's about
Oh,
40
doesn't.
kilometers on route to Versailles,
How wonderful. Because
in the middle of
he was,
nowhere.
isn't he, doesn't he have a house? Wasn't there a house in Saint-Jean-de-Luz as
Well,
well?
he moved around quite a lot, but
Yeah.
this is the house that he bought, and he really decorated, and the gardens are beautiful with sort of Japanese trees, and I mean everything is very specific as it would be.
And it's a
And
museum, is it? Can
it's a
one go
museum
visit?
that you can visit at weekends. I mean it's very small, but every corner is used and beautiful and funny. I mean that's what's really intriguing. He was just very funny.
Wow. Well,
Yes,
they are
well,
both
yeah.
quite remarkable composers, aren't they?
Yes.
And so I'm looking at the other composers on your album. And you've got such an interesting mix of composers because then we go to another French composer, but quite unknown, Chaminade.
Yes.
How many pieces by her? Two is
Two
the
pieces.
yeah.
And actually, her Autrefois was one of the pieces that made me want to re record this album. It sort of seemed to have come together because it also looks back at a time gone past. And I remember hearing this for the first time and not really knowing who it was by. Was it Scarlatti? Was it? I don't know. I just couldn't place it. And I found it really mesmerizing. And I couldn't stop practicing it. So I thought I have to look into her a bit more. And she has some lovely sort of salon pieces. This Norvégienne is also really,
Yes.
really fun. Audiences always like it in concert. And it's just amazing how composers who were relatively well known in their own lifetime can then just disappear.
She's had a bit of a revival, I
Yes,
guess.
exactly. But only very specific pieces. She had a very long life, and so she wrote a lot. I think flautists know her very well, because of flute concerto. But yeah, no, fascinating composer. It's just been really fun to discover
Yes,
what
she
there
is
is of
amazing. We've
her.
had a lot of her pieces in the magazine because they're so pleasing. They're romantic and they're light and they're flowing.
Exactly. No, they're fun. It's a you can build really interesting programs with them. So no, that's been great. And
Absolutely.
she was
Yeah.
around, of course, during Ravel's life. So they were all overlapped up to a point.
Oh, did they know each other?
I don't know. Actually, I don't know. That's something to look into. But the other composer, Dora Pejacevic, is somebody that I knew of when I was growing up in Sarajevo, by name. I'm not even sure that I knew it was a woman. I knew of a Pejacevic composer, which
Okay.
is interesting because actually, when she had her symphony premiered in Vienna, I think the audience also didn't know it was a woman because in the program it stated D. Pejacevic. And so they were all aghast when a woman got up to take her applause at the end. You just couldn't get hold of the music when I was a child. And in the last sort of 10, 15 years, the Croatian Music Institute has really been putting together all the editions and have done a wonderful job. You can get the whole oeuvre now. And I mean, what a composer.
Well, yeah.
She's a bit like Janáček. It's the when I came across Janáček's music, it really just grabbed me. I just wanted to play his music, and I've had a very similar reaction to her. I guess, like Janáček, she has a immediacy to
Yes.
her sound, to her
Yes.
language. She really wears her heart on her sleeve. And I think early on she was very much influenced by Grieg. Like she wrote, I think, a couple of Papillons, which I'm sure are inspired by Grieg's Butterfly. And later, I mean, she died at age 37, so she had a very short life. But in that time, she changed so much in her style.
Yes.
Some of her pieces sound like Prokofiev, and then I mean, always very much like her. But she has a really interesting harmonic language, and
Yeah.
always takes you on a journey. It sort of feels like she takes the listener by the hand
Absolutely.
tells a story, even whether it's a short piece or a long piece. It's always
Absolutely.
interesting.
I mean, the piece that you have on the album, it's fantastic, and it's lovely. We actually featured it inside Pianist magazine 2 years
Yeah, so
ago.
tell me about this. How did you come to discover it? And
I have to be honest with you, I heard it on Radio 3.
okay.
I listened to Radio 3 in the background most of the time, and it stopped me in my tracks because it's breathtakingly beautiful. Everybody out there, get to the piano and learn this piece.
Yes,
Don't you
absolutely.
agree?
I really do agree. And again, it's one of the cases somebody was that was so well regarded in her time. Even Schoenberg thought she was great, but then he remembered she was a woman and women shouldn't compose. But she had pieces done in Vienna, in Dresden, in London even, and then just as she died, it just all got forgotten. It's just extraordinary. Her piano concerto. She wrote a piano concerto and a Concertstück, and I mean, sort of like Rachmaninoff, Mach 2. It's really melodic and really feisty writing, confident writing. And what I notice with, I'm going to be performing a lot of her music in the coming season, and she and Ravel were both paramedics during the First World War, which is quite unusual for a countess. She really detested her class and thought them lazy. And this experience profoundly changed her, of course. But Ravel, I think, became simpler after the First World War, whereas I think she became much more feisty, confident, in her language. So I'm playing one of the sonatas, which is her last final piece, Opus 57, and it's just extraordinary. It's through composed and very different from Erinnerung, remembrance, but fascinating. Like
How
her other pieces,
interesting.
you can't stop practicing it.
Wow. And if you could, I mean, you say you're playing a lot of her repertoire. That to me sounds quite challenging, the sonata, technically.
It is very challenging technically and harmonically. She has her own very rich harmonic language, which is quite hard to learn. So it took me a very long time to memorize. And she takes you on these, the transitions are unexpected, and that takes quite a while to master how to get from A to B, both in tempo and in breathing and phrasing. But it's very satisfying. It's a good workout.
Wow. Are there any other pieces you would say by her that are easier to handle technically, let's say for the more intermediate level
Yes,
piano?
absolutely. So the Blumenleben, the Life of Flowers, I would really recommend, especially the Rose. It's so sensuous and wonderful. I think that's sort of maybe grade 7, 8 level.
Okay.
Some of them are easier. I think there are 8 in total, and they're really wonderful, wonderful pieces. And I'm sure, again, slightly influenced by the lyric pieces because there's something shared in them. Also, the two nocturnes, Opus 50, they're quite impressionistic.
Yes.
Again, very beautiful
Oh, can
pieces
be.
that are definitely m more manageable and shorter.
Okay. Great. That's wonderful to hear. So really, when you're looking at, I haven't really touched on Cheryl Frances Hoad yet and her dance suite, which appears on the album.
That's right.
Could you tell us a little bit about
Of
her, the
course, yes.
composer?
Well, Cheryl's been a composer that I've been working with for since 2012, I think. But we were friends at Cambridge, and I love her music. And if there is a chance of playing her music, I'm always very happy to do so. And just by pure coincidence, she happened to have written this dance suite when I was putting together a dance-inspired album. So I thought I had to include this. And it's nice to hear how composers who are living today also react to these old dance forms and how they take it forward and what they come up with. So it's I think it just fits quite nicely, and it's a bit of a different palette to all the other the other composers. And it's nice to have a predominantly female album, actually. So three women and two men.
Absolutely. Did she sit down with you and work on the piece with you?
Not this one, no. She just sent me the score, and I liked it. And but we when she's written pieces for me before, I mean, I trust her so much, and it's, you know, it's not, I'm not a composer, I can't tell her what to do. So I'm very happy to, for her to just write me something, which is also a little bit nerve-wracking because you never know what you're going to get, but also fun, and you know, what an honor. So we've never really had an exchange. I might give her a concept or an idea, but that's as far as it goes. I just know that she will come up with something brilliant every time. So,
Goodness, so this was written for you, the dance suite.
no. So it was
Oh.
done in Pristine. She just,
Okay.
it was just available at the right time. So very happy to include
Fantastic.
it too. Yes,
And it's a world premiere
it
recording,
is a
isn't
world premiere recording, indeed. Yes,
it? And the
yeah.
album, when is the album out, or it's already out? I'm trying
It's
to.
not. It's out in just under a month, on the 21st of November.
Oh, 21st of
So
November.
there have been singles released every 2 weeks leading up to it, and no, it's very nice to have an album. But it's been quite a while since my last one in 2019. So that's.
Oh, well, the programming is beautiful. I think
Thank you.
listeners will really enjoy this. So what I'm going to do now is just ask you a little bit about your background, actually,
Okay.
because some pianists do the competition route and win first. Well, there's been so many competitions this year.
Yes.
But you say you studied at Cambridge.
Yes. I started music school when I was six before I started normal school. Because
Okay.
I grew up in Sarajevo, and we start normal school, if you can call it normal school, a lot later, so at the age of seven. So my mum, being a pianist, I think just wanted to start me off. So that's, and we had lessons twice a week, and twice a week solfège, so it was quite intense. And when I came to the UK age 12, I continued at Junior Guildhall. So I felt, you know, especially given what had happened from where I was from, I felt it would be wise to have a degree. And also I wanted to meet people who are not musicians. I thought that was, you know, as a pianist, you're in a room on your own for a long time. And I'm very sociable, and I like to hear about other subjects and hear about meet people. So I thought it was just a what a great opportunity if you managed to get a place at Cambridge. So I did that, but I didn't realize at the time just how much performing there would be at Cambridge, because not part of the course, but people would just get together and, you know, put on an opera, put on a concerto, and be proactive about that. And I think I learned so much from that, and that's been a great asset to me, and to have those networks and people that I met who are actually still performing almost even more from Cambridge than I from my colleagues at the Royal College of Music, where I then did my master's.
Okay. You don't imagine that you go to Cambridge and you're performing a lot. You imagine it's going to be so academic, don't you?
Well,
Focus.
it is. I had to write a lot of fugues, which was painful. It doesn't come naturally, fugues and analyzing Gregorian chants and things like that, which I think I was just a bit, it would be nice to do now, I think, now that I'm a bit older and would enjoy that more. But at the time, it was just something I did, but and wrote many essays. But actually, one of the courses by Marina Frolova Walker was really something that grabbed me, and Sandy Goa used to teach Ballet Russe, and that period, I mean, this is sort of the same period, but if I could go back in time and be born at a different time, it would definitely be that. So that was very inspiring, and you know, it just teaches you a lot. We did learn a lot, or we learned how little we knew, at least while on that course.
That's so interesting. Yeah, and you then you went to the Royal College of Music. So you decided to go back to a real
I did
music.
decided to see whether I could make a career out of playing the piano, and yeah.
And you have. I believe you also you do work for Music Action International.
I don't work for them, but I'm what they call an ambassador. Well, given my background, I think it's really important for refugees to give them a sense of pride or purpose when they come to this country. And a lot of refugees that Music Action International works with have been through horrendous experiences. And through music, whether they had a music background or not, they get put in bands and they get to make music together and also maybe perform together, make CDs together, perhaps even eventually make a living out of this. And it's just so powerful and so important that I think whenever I get a chance to talk about their work or publicize them, I try to do that.
Oh, that's absolutely lovely. Okay, so I think now, away from the heavy stuff, I'm
Okay.
going to ask you some rather light-hearted questions,
Okay.
and if you could just answer them really off the cuff.
Okay.
And so here we go. The first question: if you could play only one composer from now on, who would it be?
Bach, probably.
Why?
Because it has everything. It's mentally, emotionally, physically challenging and rewarding.
Yeah, I think I can understand that.
Yeah.
Okay, end of that. I
Sorry,
mean,
yeah.
definitely Bach. Yes. Okay,
Maybe
one.
Schubert as well, but
Ah, okay. Yeah. Yeah.
yeah.
Two very, yeah, fit perfectly there. Absolutely.
Yes.
Okay, one pianist, dead or alive, you'd travel long and far to hear.
So can I have a dead and an alive one?
Why not?
I think Martha Argerich, who's just extraordinary. I mean, how is that possible? And Liszt, I'd love to hear Liszt. I would really love, I mean, it must have been amazing. I hope it was amazing. I don't know. I mean, I just would want to be at one of those concerts.
Two very, very good answers, I have to say.
Yes.
Martha Argerich was playing last night at the
I
Wigmore Hall.
know, I was so sad I couldn't get tickets. I was
Yeah.
there 10 years ago for the 75th birthday and they play the symphonic dancers and that was just extraordinary.
I
And
know.
I've heard her since in Switzerland and I mean she just gets better and better.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, she is somebody you would travel long and far to hear, isn't she?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Amazing. She looked incredibly fresh and played incredibly freshly last night. It was incredible. You know.
How?
I know how. Oh, anyway. One person dead or alive you'd love to play for.
So this is tricky. Mozart?
What do you think he'd say?
I don't know, but I would quite like to meet him, so I think that any excuse to meet him.
He'd be your teacher of choice.
Yes, or somebody sort of a little bit unusual like that. Personality.
Ravel?
I mean, yes, absolutely, Ravel or Beethoven. I'm not sure I would want to receive their feedback, but I would love to meet them.
They might be very critical,
Yes,
mightn't
I think that goes without saying.
Okay, do you yourself have any technical struggles at the keyboard?
I mean, who doesn't? I mean, every piece brings its own technical struggles, I think, and the key is to think musically through them. I do suffer sometimes from sweaty hands, which in concert, which is annoying, and sometimes you have to make up fingering on the spot. It keeps you on your toes. But I
Gosh.
try to not think about it. Yes, some people do who are in the similar position do go through extreme treatments, but then I think you think about it more and then it just gets worse, whereas
Oh, how
yeah.
interesting. But start Making up new fingerings on the spot. My goodness, that's like a nightmare.
It can be fun. It can be fun too. But I've discovered once I was quite jet lagged after flying to America to play, and I had very dry hands. Really, really dry. And that was even worse because I couldn't grip onto
Yeah.
the keys. So I'm just happy with what I have now.
Do you do any warm-up-y things to help your hands? Like, well, you wouldn't need fingerless gloves, would you? But I mean, some
No.
people,
You mean
no.
in general or just because of?
Yeah, maybe to that help you before a performance.
Just slow sort of finger warm-ups, yeah, or chords. Depends on what I'm playing. It's sort of different every time. I don't have a very set routine.
Do you not? I was actually just now that we're talking. Do you do your scales? Do you do warm-ups like
Yeah,
that at?
I love scales. Or some studies, Chopin studies, or even Czerny studies. But it's a very slow practice of the pieces I'm doing. But more what I'm more set on the concert day is sort of when I eat and when I sleep and what I eat. It's more things like that rather than how I play.
Interesting. Do you eat light before you play? Yes, you can't have a heavy
I
meal.
used to eat heavy. I used to eat a lot, but as I've got older, no, light and fish rather than. And never pasta, I think, then carbs. Yes. So,
No,
yes.
they'll weigh you down.
Bananas, grapes, and fish. But
Okay.
not together.
Bananas, grapes, and no. But that's so interesting. Okay, what would be your advice to an amateur pianist about how to improve?
Well, apart from practice, obviously, live, go and listen to concerts, go to art exhibitions, read, listen to other people, not on your instrument. Go to the opera, go to orchestral concerts, go and hear singers. I think especially singers for pianists.
Definitely. Definitely. We all want to have that cantabile, don't we?
Yeah, absolutely. And phrasing, it's so easy to forget to breathe when you're playing the, I mean, not literally, but musically, and because we don't need to change our bow, or we don't need to take a breath, and the quality, the technical proficiency nowadays is so high, but sometimes it at the expense of phrasing and expression.
Absolutely. If you weren't a pianist, what would you be?
Either a doctor or an architect.
Okay, why? Why?
A doctor because it's something meaningful and being with people and helping people. I was very close to studying medicine but decided not to. And architect because it's again a little bit like creating your interpretation, sort of building structures. I think. Oh, that's my concept of what an architect does. I don't know, but yeah, creating structures and patterns and just being creative.
Absolutely. Very, very interesting. Oh, final question. One composer you're not quite ready to tackle.
Brahms.
Why is that?
Don't know. I mean, some pieces maybe. I don't know. I just think other people can say it better than I can, and I used to play a lot of his music when I was at the college, and yeah, don't
That's interesting. Yeah, I myself, I'm not, I prefer not to play Brahms. I don't know.
know.
But what about Schumann?
I played a lot of Kreisleriana. I love his concerto. I mean, if I could just, that's actually one of those pieces that I'm so happy to practice. My husband always says that you are always in a good mood when you're practicing the concerto. And it's true. I just adore that. But some Schumann, not all Schumann.
Have you played his Fantasy?
No, I've taught it, but I haven't played it. No.
Yeah, Schumann is. Yeah.
I mean, my tastes have changed so much since I've been a student, so who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, there's a lot of composers out there, aren't there?
Yes, and you sort of grow in, you mature and There was a time when I didn't understand Schubert, and now I don't understand how I didn't understand Schubert. So,
course, of course.
so one grows and matures,
Yes.
and that's what's really interesting and fun. You're just drawn to different things and different tastes. And
Absolutely. And before we sign off, I know you're very busy at the moment, but I think you're giving a recital. You'll be giving a recital a week after this podcast comes out.
oh, yes.
And in London, Café
In
Saturn.
London, in fact, two.
Oh, tell us.
I will be launching the album on Monday, the 24th of November at Zedel's, which is a lovely jazz venue. It's actually called the Crazy Cocks, where I filmed the video of Chaminade's Autrefois. So if you go online, you can see what it looks like. But it's really because I thought it might be f fun, given the title of the album and the repertoire, to play somewhere that's a little bit less formal.
Okay.
And Ravel spent m many nights going to listen to jazz musicians and watch people dance in Paris. And so it's really, I think he would approve of the Parisian decor that's at Zedel's 1920s sort of decor, and also the cocktails.
Oh, yes.
Yes.
And that's you're playing there twice? That's.
I'm playing at 7 o'clock. It's just over now, and then at 9:15, just over now. And
Fantastic.
it's most of the album, so it will be quite fun.
Fantastic. Okay. And for the rest of the year, busy, busy.
Yes, mainly learning lots of new repertoire. I have a new duo with Tim Horton on two pianos. So we're doing the symphonic dances early in next year. And learning Rhapsody in Blue as well, which is new to me, and lots of Mendelssohn. So watch this space. Yes, I know.
Oh, that's wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. Well, listen, I think we've come to an end. That was just such a lovely
Thank
conversation
you. I
with
really
you,
enjoyed that. I
Barbara.
forgot that it was an interview.
Was lovely, and we've never really had a chance to chat. So it was a pleasure, and I hope everybody else has enjoyed it. And I'll be there on the 21st of November for sure.
Thank you. 24th.
Sorry?
24th of November.
Oh, 24.
Fourth. But the
Okay.
album comes out on the 21st, but the launch concerts are on the 24th.
Ah, okay, I've made a note. Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much, Ivana, for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's been really fun. Thank you.
You're welcome. That was the toccata from Ravel's Le Tombeau de Couperin, and it was performed by Ivana Gavrik. Pianist podcasts are free, and a really good way to support what we do is by subscribing to Pianist. Visit our website at pianistmagazine.com and listen to us on YouTube by searching Pianist Magazine. And don't forget to sign up to our newsletter, which is full of extra playing tips and useful information. Go to pianistmagazine.com to find out how to sign up.